You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Broken records. The albums you wouldn't shut up about. Broken records. The music our guests can't live without.
Like Judy.
Barbara.
Liza.
Bette.
Betty.
Audra.
Bernadette.
We broadcast this podcast with hopes that someday we might get Patti LaPone.
Welcome to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. I'm Ben Rimmelauer, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Daniel Nolan.
Hey, y'all. We are coming at you live from the front lines of our quarantine at Ben's apartment in Williamsburg.
You've heard of Typhoid Mary? I'm Corona Carl.
That's not funny.
Irony is truly dead.
It wasn't ironic, either.
I'm so depressed.
Let's talk about our guest. Today we're chatting with two-time Tony-nominated director and actor Michael Arden.
Michael's Tony nominations were for directing the acclaimed revivals of Spring Awakening and Once on This Island.
He first came to prominence as an actor in the early aughts, starring in such musicals as Big River, Bear, a pop opera, and The Times They Are a-Changin'.
Michael is coming in to chat with us about Judy Kuhn and Daniel's favorite album, Joni Mitchell Blue.
Yes!
It's our first repeat.
It is, you know, and we're really setting, I don't know what the word is, like, we're making a choice that will, you know, maybe dictate other, we're setting the rules for the podcast, saying you can repeat albums.
I looked at Joni Mitchell's Blue from both sides now, from Judy Kuhn and Michael Arden.
Yeah, but, you know, that's, an album like Blue can stand up to that type of scrutiny several many times. And I feel like, do we talk even a lot about it? I can't remember, but
with Michael, yeah, we do.
The Judy episode, you know, we talk about it, but it was a 30 minute Broadway Con episode.
And I had a lot to say about chess.
right. So it's good that we're taking another you know, dive down that Joni Mitchell Blue River.
Yeah, well, we're all feeling blue.
We're all feeling blue. Okay, let's talk Corona.
Let's talk about it. I'm, like, a little disturbed because, like, some of the guests that I've been, like, writing to, like, trying to set up our, like, new records.
Yeah.
Have been very, like,
no.
You know, yeah. And I'm like, we can come to your house with our equipment. And they're like,
even worse.
We don't want you here.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, I'm just, like, I mean, we were talking about this earlier today. Like, I'm really scared. I don't want anybody that I care about to get sick.
Of course, and that's the scary thing. It's like, you know, my grandparents are still alive, and they're in their mid-80s, and, you know, they're the ones I'm most worried about, as well as just older people I know back home and friends, parents and grandparents, and that is something that makes it real, you know?
I mean, they say 65. I mean, like, my parents are over 65,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And my parents are young compared to most people's parents my age, you know? But I'm just like, and it's so scary because, like, I don't know a single person that has it right now.
That we know of.
Okay, but, like, you know, it's, like, it's so weird to think this thing is going to be devastating, and yet I don't know a single person. Like, not one of my, like, 5,000 Facebook friends has, like, posted that they have it, you know?
Right.
And it's, like,
but I have seen a lot of people I follow on Twitter, like, or even real friends who are quarantining because someone they know has it, you know?
That's so very removed, though. I mean, it's like, I posted this thing on Facebook, and like my uncle Mitchell, who's a gay man, mm-hmm. In his 60s, compared it to the experience of the AIDS crisis.
Yeah.
And that feels odd to me too, because like, I would imagine that was very different because they knew so many people, you know. But then somebody else said, Ron Goldberg, author of the book The Boy with the Bugle, which I think is not out yet, about mm-hmm. his years in ACT UP. Mm-hmm. Great title. Mm-hmm. Ron said, no, it's like the very beginning of the AIDS crisis when you didn't know anybody yet. And it's like just this sense of dread, you know. And, we don't know. It's just so weird because, like, it's going to be worse than I want it to be. But I pray to God it's not as bad as I'm scared it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope that, you know, they're really taking efforts now, like, across the city and across the world, I mean, across the country, hopefully, you know, that will help, you know, quote, flatten the curve, as we've heard. No large gatherings, no Broadway shows, everything's been canceled. I mean, is there a world where they'll stop running the trains and stop
the buses? I mean, I haven't taken the train.
I have, and it's, you know, everyone's being very, like, alert and on guard and cautious, but it's like, if you stopped running the trains, that would force everyone to stay.
Yeah.
You know?
But I mean, I just worry about other stuff. Like, so we took an Uber to go record.
Yeah.
And so I took my suitcase out of the trunk that had the recording equipment in it. So is that contaminated because it was in the trunk of the car? Or because I touched, like, when we got inside, after I touched the trunk of the car and the door handles and everything, then I washed my hands. But I didn't wash the suitcase. So I put the suitcase down before I washed my hands. But then I had to get the stuff out from the suitcase so we could record this. So did I need to wash my hand again after I did that? And is the stuff then that my suitcase touched on the floor of my apartment, is that stuff contaminated? Like, where do you draw the line, you know?
I know, and I can't even, you know, I mean, if you think about it, it's like when you walk on the street, if someone sneezed and it fell on the street, like, are your soles of your shoes contaminated? And then you walk through your apartment, and then it's like, you know, you could spiral on and on about it. But I think the thing is, we have to do the best we can.
Right.
Nothing's ever going to be perfect. Nothing's ever going to be
one. But I just wonder, like, how far from perfect I am, like, you know, that I should be getting closer to it.
You know? Well, and I think that's,
like, I've gone to a couple of supermarkets in the last few days.
Yeah.
I was on a text chain with my family, and they were saying that my dad was saying he and my mom aren't going to go, and they were just going to get delivery, even though it took, there was, like, no delivery times for, like, several days. But, like, but, I mean, of course, they're older, so they should be more cautious, but, like...
Well, and also, but, like, what about the delivery? It's, like, you know, that's being touched by hands.
Well, but there's a difference between one person who's delivering it to you than being at the store, you know.
Right.
I mean, you're a lot more likely to get somebody's corona germs that you're in the same room with than you are somebody who touched the same thing you touched, like, 2 hours before you did, you know.
Right, and that's my thing also is, like, you know, right now I'm just being so cautious about, like, when I touch, like, the subway pole or whatever, like, I, like, make sure I don't touch anything else with that hand until I wash it or whatever. But,
I mean, I always do that. I'm so traumatized by subway poles.
I know. But, you know, it's like they're cleaning the subways now and, you know, everyone's being so cautious that, like, I should be cautious and worried about that. But, like, chances are that subway pole is going to be a lot cleaner than it was a month ago,
but,
you know?
But what, the reason I usually wash my hands after touching the subway pole is because it has cooties and it's, like, gross and slimy and stuff. This is different.
And that doesn't bother me.
No, but that they're cleaning it only takes away the gross sliminess. It doesn't have to be gross to be carrying coronavirus.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, the fact that they're cleaning the trains and the buses every, what is it, like, 48, 72 hours, and everyone else is sanitizing and washing their hands and using gloves, it's like, hopefully that means the poles are a lot cleaner than they are in my mind, you know? Like,
not the same poles you were talking about 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Meaning the election poles, not like smoking
cock. Like, oh my.
Not that kind of pole position. But, like,
I don't know, but I'm also, like, I'm so...
I don't know, but, like, just why, I mean, like, you know, Gideon said his husband, you know, his husband's a doctor, and he was, I was like, well, I hope this doesn't last too long, and he was like, it's the tip of the iceberg. Like, I know that's the truth, so I know there's no answer to this, but I'm like, how bad is it going to get? How many people am I going to know that get sick? How many people am I going to know that die? How many people that I care about are going to get sick? Are any people that I care about going to die? And I don't just mean, like, old lady famous stars that I worship, but like, I mean, like, people, I mean, I don't even want to say it.
You know, hopefully this is, you know, everything that people are doing, the decisions people are making to shut down events and limit travel, it's like that will hopefully help flatten the curve.
Yeah, but we're way behind. Like, I mean, I know, you read the stuff about, like, people, like, the hospitals become totally overrun.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's the thing also. It's like...
Like, what happens if people that you care about are sick and in a world maybe they would be able to get better, but they're not able to because the hospitals are so overrun?
Well, that's, you know, what's happening in Italy. And they're saying, you know, if you think you have it, don't go to the doc. If you think you have it and you're not, you know, dying... Don't go to the doctor because that just...
Well, they're saying don't go to the emergency room. Don't go to the hospital. They're not saying don't go to the doctor.
Well, something I read did say that. It was like, don't, you know, just isolate and you know, you might not ever know if you actually had it, but assume you have it, but don't, unless you're like having trouble breathing or whatever, you can't get a test in New York. So it's like, if you went to the doctor, they would just like tell you to self-isolate and wash your hands, you know, everything that people are saying. So like, that's actually... better not to put stress on the medical teams or whatever, because they actually have, like, you know, people they need to deal with who are suffering. So, but my thing also is, you know, they talk about you can have, like, mild or no symptoms.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have a friend who we usually hang out, like, you know, at least once a week, and he says he thinks he has a cold, but, like, he just feels like he's, like, has, like, chills or whatever, but, like, that's all he's had for like 3 days, but it hasn't progressed to the other symptoms. So he's of course self-isolating as a, you know, just to be safe. But that's what I'm like, can you have, if you have something like that, like, does it still count even if you don't have like the coughing and the shortness of breath?
Yeah, symptoms are just symptoms. I mean, what matters is if you have the virus. Most people that have the virus have no symptoms.
Right. That's the scariest part. It's like,
I mean, it reminds me of,
we have it right now.
We very well might. When I was, like, in my early 20s, my roommate at the time used to get bad cold sores.
Mm-hmm.
And we smoked weed all the time out of a bong. Mm-hmm. What do you keep looking at?
My glass.
No, your phone. You're, like, checking something.
Oh, I was just checking the time.
Oh. checking a lot.
Yeah. I didn't see a mouse on my phone.
I'm not worried about my... Oh, my God. I would fucking felch a mouse. Are you kidding? Save my family's life. I'm so over my mouse fear.
Wow. I love how that's in your mind. That's like, that would be, like, a thing. Like, you confronting your mouse fear would save your family's life.
I'm saying all my anxiety is very firmly focused in one area only now. I don't give a fuck about mice.
But now there's, like, this weird bargaining thing you're doing where you're like,
well, always. but I just don't have any anxiety left over from my usual bullshit.
Right. Well, you know, it really puts everything in perspective.
Anyway, in my early 20s, my roommate and I smoked a lot of weed together out of this bong, and he's got these bad cold sores, and I remember talking to my therapist about it. My therapist was like, some people there are people that have never been exposed to the herpes virus.
Right.
He's like, but there's a lot of people that have been exposed and just don't have symptoms, and you're definitely in that category. So I wouldn't worry about it.
Right, right. That's the thing. It's like, and when I went to the grocery store yesterday, you know, the checker guy, whatever, was like, I don't remember what he said, but he was like, you know, it's scary because you don't know who has it. Because they're not testing, and we're beyond that point now. Like, we can't. Even if we got the tests now in New York, it would put too much of a strain on the system. So they're saying, like, we're beyond that now. We don't even need the tests. Like, we shouldn't have the tests, you know.
The fuck are we gonna do?
So anyway, I mean, the good news is that this is a great time for people to listen to our podcast and catch up on old episodes.
Oh my God. oh, fuck my life. Yes, listen to the podcast. I mean, well, that's the thing. It's like, so what is the reality if the majority of people don't die? If the majority of people don't even get sick?
Yeah.
So the majority of people are just going to be on quarantine, like, without much to do and hopefully not suffering too badly financially. Like, what, that's, I mean, that's what everyone's yeah. talking about, right? It's like what movies they're watching, what TV shows they're binging, books right. they're reading, music, but like, they're listening to.
You know, that's fun for like a couple of days, but then after that, it's like the cabin fever's gonna set in, you know.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, like, I'd be very happy not to go out. Like, if I can still, like, take little walks around the neighborhood, yeah. I'd be very happy.
Well, and, you know, I was joking with my therapist or someone. I was like, you know, I feel like this is, like, I've been practicing for this my whole life, you know? Like,
I'm surprised your therapist is even seeing you. I feel like most people's therapists are making them do phone sessions now.
Really? Interesting. Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing that's so fucked up about the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. Is, like, don't you feel like Barack Obama would have, like, gotten on TV and told us exactly what we needed to do, and, like, there would be such clear truth.
Oh, absolutely. With anyone else, there would be.
Totally.
You know?
Totally. Like, George Bush would have introduced an expert who we could all trust yeah. and told us what we need to know.
I mean, the thing with Trump also, it's, like, in his...
Wait, did you just agree with me on a sort of, like, you know, neoliberal, like, the good old days under George Bush kind of take on something?
No, but that's nothing political. I mean, there's nothing political about that. It's just someone doing their job, you right. know? It's like, even though I there are plenty of criticisms I have of Barack Obama, like, I do think he would be 100% able to handle this crisis better than Trump, you know?
Right, well, literally anyway.
Anyone could. But, you know... The thing with Trump is he's such a nutcase that, like, I'm sure in his mind he's, like, admitting that corona has come to the U.S. Somehow he thinks that's gonna, like, make him look bad, you know, or, like, or he doesn't... Like, he said, I read this thing, it's so evil, it was, like, you know, they offered Trump, like, back in January when all this was starting, like, the World Health Organization or someone offered Trump the opportunity to get a lot of testing started in the U.S.
Yeah.
And he turned it down because he thought if the rate of infection was known via tests in the U.S., that would affect his approval rating and his reelection.
I mean, it's so crazy to think about that. In retrospect, because it's so evil and it's also so wrong. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, so incorrect. Like,
yeah.
clearly, I mean, he's got to wish now that he had done that, right?
Right,
like,
exactly.
What would it have been for Trump to be like, there's something really horrible happening and I'm doing the best job anyone could do to protect us all from it?
Right.
Like, I guess his ratings would be lower than if there were nothing wrong. But that's such a short-sighted... I mean, you talk about, like, people, like, being short-sighted about climate change or something... Mm-hmm. But you think about them being short-sighted, like, putting their own money this year ahead of their children's future. Right. But you don't think about them putting their own success in March yeah. secondary to their success in January. I mean, it's so... I guess it just blew up in his face. I mean, in fairness... Not fairness, but, like, you know, and the truth is, like, even just a couple weeks ago, and certainly in January, like, I had the attitude of, like, I'm not somebody that got all worked up about Ebola.
Right.
I didn't get all worked up about SARS or bird flu or, you know, I don't follow, like, crime TV, like right. the OJ trial or all that, you know.
Same.
I don't get on that bandwagon. So, yeah. like, I just, like, I'm not excited about this, you know. But it's proved to be something completely right. bigger.
I mean, I kept telling myself, I always, I mean, because, like, Ebola and stuff, I remember being, like, really scared and paranoid about that kind of stuff. But that was also when I used to be much more anxious than I am now. But I you know, several weeks ago, I just kept telling myself, like, you always freak out about this stuff, and it's never a big deal. It always goes away. You know, it always is never as bad as you think.
I mean, it's so funny. Like, we had the same take, even though we had different feelings.
Yeah.
You always freak out about this, but it's never a big deal. It's never a big deal. I was like, you never freak out about this, and it's never a big deal. So right, don't even listen. Right. And now the one thing we got wrong was that it is a big deal.
Well, and it's...
I will say, though, you know, like, I've been in this, like, MAME place, like, these yeah. last... And this drove me right back into the arms of Barbara Cook.
Oh, like, interesting.
Like, 2 months ago, mm-hmm. I had, like, sort of slightly moved on from Barbara Cook, and I was a little about, like, I feel as though, you know, what are we celebrating, Mame? Yeah. You know? And now I feel much more like, remember
yeah.
a place from long ago.
I've been really diving into a lot of old comfort music for myself as well.
But not, like not just comfort, like... I need, like, comfort that's, like, I need music that is sad because it, I feel like it can speak to me where I am.
Right.
I can't put on, like, Patti LuPone singing, like, same, you yeah. know, I Got the Sun in the Morning.
Right.
Like.
Although I will say it's.
No shade to Ms. Loopy.
Miss Loop.
Momentarily paused on Broadway, but soon to return. What are you looking at?
I was looking at the sky. I was about to comment on how wonderful, how beautiful it was out today, but it's like all gray and cloudy now. But
it was beautiful before.
I will say, today and yesterday were so lovely. And, you know, I took a long walk yesterday. And that, I think, helps. You know?
Yeah, it really does.
If it was like, if we were all inside and it was raining out and gray and.
Yeah, at least it's spring.
And I mean, we're in Williamsburg now, and of course, like, you know, there's still people out brunching and all that. But. You know,
I mean, it really surprises me that people are out in restaurants and bars. Are they not reading the stuff I'm reading? Or are they not taking it seriously?
Well, it's, you know, I think with restaurants, they haven't shut them down, but it's like they have, you know, they've put those restrictions. What is it, like 50? They have to be at 50% capacity, you know, which went in effect last night. And so it's like, I think that's making people think, like, oh, it's still okay to go out. We're just being very diligent and careful. Whereas...
I don't think...
It's still obviously way better if they
wouldn't. I'm scared that that's not true and that we're about to all be so fucked and everything, the subway and the restaurants, are going to be shut down by the government because it has to be. And we're going to wish that we all did what we could now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's what they're saying is, like, do what you can now because it's... It's not worth it. You know, it's not worth the alternative.
I mean, I hope that they don't get to the point where they're like, don't even, like, go to a friend's house.
That's the thing I'm struggling with, because it's like, you and me are hanging out in your house, and, you know, I'm going over to a friend's house tonight, and it's like, in my mind, I'm like, oh, it's fine, because we're both, like, healthy, but it's like...
But we're multiplying everything that each of us has been exposed to onto each other.
And it's like,
I mean, but I'm not scared about getting it. I mean, I hope that I don't.
Right.
But, like, I feel confident, maybe stupidly, but, I mean, statistically, that you or I would be okay if we got it.
Totally.
I'm the reason I'm scared about contributing it to it being spread around.
Exactly.
And I'm really worried about people that I love that are more vulnerable.
100%. 100%. And that's, you know, that's how it should be.
I mean, the one thing that honestly makes me happy is because I just think about my nephew and I just, like, pray nothing happens to him.
Right.
And I love hearing that little kids just seem to be, like, you know...
immune or whatever.
Or just, like, don't seem to be getting sick.
That's, that is a good silver lining.
And that just fills me with joy.
But it's also, you know, I hope in the end, you know, as horrific as I'm sure this will be, I'm hoping in the end it will... Some good will come out of it in the sense that we rebuild. This causes this broken system to crumble, and it something good comes out of it, and we really think about going forward, like how we're going to improve this. And
I sure as shit hope that is true. And well, also, the two things. One thing is that, which I hate to say it, I think is more. I hope that too, although I'm a little pessimistic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the realistic version of that is, like, what I wish would be is that, like, the system would get, things would get so fucked up where people don't have the health care and financial resources they need, and this winds up being much worse than it had to be, and it makes the country take a serious look at fixing the system, putting into place all those progressive policies and even more stuff that we haven't even talked about, you know? I feel like more realistic is that it just, like, moves the needle a little bit, you know? Like, if in this thing it came down to, you know, where the two most progressive candidates were for Medicare for All, and then who were the other people standing at the end? It was, like, Biden, Bloomberg, Amy, Pete. Was there somebody else at that point?
Tom. Yeah.
You know, where only two of the seven were pro-Medicare for All, maybe 2 years from now or whatever, it would be, you know, 5 of the 7 were pro Medicare for all. That's more realistic. The other thing that I hope is that it like just hurts Trump.
And I think it will definitely hurt Trump. I mean, I you know, the polls have said now, you know, as much as I love Bernie, they're now saying, the polls are saying that Biden and Bernie could beat Trump. And whereas, you know, all these things I was seeing, it was like only Bernie beats Trump. And now it's like both Bernie and Biden are seen as beating Trump. Yeah. And it's probably because of this. And I also just, you know, hope people see this in the in a big picture, long-term sense, because it's like this, you know, this viruses like this that are spread from wildlife or whatever, that is an effect of, you know, interaction with species that humans don't normally interact with. And that's an effect of deforestation and climate change and all that. And this will only keep happening if we don't address that.
Right. Well, but the other thing that is maybe more possible, I mean, the fact is there are always going to be sicknesses that come up, and in our global economy and, you know, it, things that would have just naturally been contained to the area they started in 100 years ago are just going to spread faster and faster around the world because we all travel more and more globally. And it's just, that's the name, you know, people do business in different continents in the week, you know, and what we, it proves how much the whole fake news idea is really dangerous. Right. It's time like this when we really need to have trust in the government, and there needs to be less, politicizing of the media. You know, we have to be able to, like, believe the news. I mean, I feel sorry for Trump voters who, you know, listen to this. I mean, at least I knew when he said it was a Democratic hoax that he was wrong.
Right.
You know?
And some people are, like, you know, believing.
And it seems like a lot of those people are probably older, you know?
Yeah, totally. And also just the fact that, you know, like, I was out shopping yesterday and getting all my supplies, and there's a lot of old people out there shopping and doing things. But it's because they don't, you know, they don't have enough money to, like, you know, hire someone or you know, get a big delivery or, you know, they don't have family to go out and do it for them. And
well, it'll be interesting to see, I mean, as this goes on, maybe that will be something that there can be community efforts to deal with.
Totally. You know? And it's, you know, we're already seeing some of that happening now, which is good. But, I mean, this will affect our poorest and most vulnerable exponentially more than, you know, the rich and powerful, and that's also an endemic problem in our society, in our, you know, how we see the world and how our government treats the world and just the whole political system. And I mean, it's so, it's rotten to its core.
Well, we're lucky to be in a community of artists.
Yeah. I mean,
where, you know, at least it's always about the search for meaning as all this shit goes down, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, I'm giving you that as a segue because, you know...
Right, I mean, I'm trying to, like, joyfully segue into the episode, and it's, like, so hard now.
Don't have to joyfully segue. I mean, the fact is, I mean, it's good that we're talking to Michael, who's a serious person to begin with, and we're talking about Joanie's Blue, which is an album that deals with, like, abortion and heartbreak. I mean, you know...
Not abortion, but...
Yeah, isn't that what Old Blue is about? Oh, no,
Little
adoption.
Green?
Little...
Old Blue... No, it's about, it's about her getting her dog.
You know
what,
because I was listening to Rebecca Luger sing that song, my old dog Trey, or something. Anyway, Little Green's about giving up the child for adoption. Not abortion, but whatever. It's dark. I mean,
but
Joni Mitchell's not a happy-go-lucky person.
Totally.
Anyway,
and
album especially.
You know, last time I saw Richard is about social isolation, if nothing else.
Yeah.
So.
Especially when Pone sings it.
Hello. I just hope everyone comes together and this is a...
They won't.
I feel like they will. I mean...
Well, the Democrats might. I mean, I'll tell you the...
No, I mean, like, I feel like this is a time for bipartisanship and, like, everyone needs to come together and do their part to help out. You know, even little things, like I saw the Met, you know, I had tickets to the Met 2 shows this month and they were both canceled as they should have been. But now they're releasing, you know, every night they're doing a free stream, online of a free production to watch. And, you know, I just got my email from National Grid and it was like, you know, we're for the foreseeable future, we're not doing any, what's it called?
Collections.
Collections.
Yeah, on the gas bills, and all gas bills. Well, what was the thing we were talking about doing that we were going to start doing, like, a YouTube hits thing? Like, we were going to give people, well, we were going to start talking about videos and posting
posting playlists. We should do that.
Yeah, we're going to work on that. That's our homework for ourselves.
My mom also sent me, it's some link I have to find, but she sent me the footage of my friend Ryan and me doing You Don't Own Me for the Church Talent Show.
Oh, yeah.
So I need to upload that.
So why don't you do that right away? That could be part of this moment.
Looking back, I mean, watching all these home videos that she sent me, it's like, it is so insane how just gay I was and how, like, nothing's changed. Just, like, me making my sister acting out a scene from What's Up, Doc and making her play Howard Bannister so I can play Madeline Kahn and Barbara Streisand.
Have you seen other people?
The
TV movie. I mean, the movie. No, it's not a TV movie. Wait, is that not the title of it?
Ordinary People?
No. It's written and directed by Chris Kelly. It's starring Molly Shannon. She gets cancer.
Oh, yes, of course.
Other People.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it's... I would not remember that's what it's called, but yeah.
It's called Other People.
I think that's right.
I should just look
I've seen that movie, though.
Because you're making me think of John Early and his little sister in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, John Early's little brother and his
who's in
sister
drag
in
or whatever.
You guys have to, like, I gotta look up the name of this fucking movie.
Normal People?
No, not Normal People.
That's a book.
What is it?
IMDb. But yeah, I have seen that. That's a fun, it's not a fun movie, but that's a fun scene in a very sad movie.
It's a wonderful movie, though, that everybody should watch.
Yeah, I'm really shocked. I'm so sad Molly wasn't nominated.
And it's, Chris Kelly wrote and directed it, who also created the show, The Other Two. But this was his, and he used to be a head writer on SNL.
Yes.
But, where is this? What's wrong with me that I can't find
that's the
TV show. What the heck? It's not that old.
It's
old. Other People, yeah.
Oh, it's so crazy. He did a movie Other People, and then he did The Other Two.
Yeah, that's what I was just realizing. Anyway, everyone should watch this movie, but there's a really funny scene where, Chris, the lead character is played by Jesse Plemons, and he's this gay guy, and he's gone home to visit his mom, who's got cancer, played by Molly Shannon, in a performance that should have been nominated.
Should have been.
And he goes to visit his friend that he grew up with, played by John Early, who's always fabulous. And John Early has this little gay brother, and I guess he was, like, you know, 9 or 12 or something.
Yeah.
Not 12, like 9 or 10, maybe 11. And it's it's John Early's dad's, like, 60th birthday or 50th birthday or something.
Yeah.
And so the little brother is doing a show for John Early's dad.
And it's like a
striptease. It's the gayest thing with this, like, weird striptease. It's all just, like, super, like, it's not sexual because it's this, like, little kid, but it's in that weird Britney, like, sexy, like, pop music, which just makes it more hilarious. But the funniest thing is how gay the kid is. And how he uses his little sister, presumably, as his, like, stage manager.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, at one point, and, like, she has to come, like, spray water on him or turn the fan on.
Yeah,
she's
just,
like, this trooper of, like, a stagehand. And at one point when he's, like, doing, like, a costume change and he, like, throws this, like, costume or prop off stage and it, like, whacks her in the face because he's just so, like, in the moment. It's just so wonderful.
That is such a good scene.
Everyone has to watch that.
But that was so me. Like, my sister and I were texting about it, and I would always, it would be, like, starring and directed by Daniel Nolan, Janie Nolan's stage manager.
Oh,
like, she was always the stage manager. And, but I mean, we had some good shit. I mean, we would do, like, talk shows and commercials and murder mysteries and...
Oh, yeah, me too. Me and my sister and me and my cousin.
Like, fight scenes on the trampoline.
All that shit, yeah.
Anyway.
But I was thinking we would post playlists of, like, videos of, like, stars that we love.
Right, of course, of course.
In addition to your
subjecting everyone,
childhood.
Everyone to
On that note, why don't we segue to Michael
Arden? Segue to Michael Arden, Joni Mitchell, Blue. Old Blue.
How dare you. Broken record, broken record,
broken record. You need that tote.
Yeah, well, on the way there, I was like,
I saw it there.
My dream piece of merch that they would have at the gift shop would be a Follies tote, and then they just happened to have one. It was the only tote they had.
Did you see Follies there? Is that what you said?
I did.
Was it everything?
I didn't love it.
No.
Oh, really? Well, what do you think about Imelda? That's the...
I mean, she can do no wrong.
Oh, you love her?
I love her.
She's so... I feel like she's so polarizing.
She's
polarizing. I like her as well, but many people don't.
But I don't think I... When I saw it in the movie theater, I liked her, I wasn't polarized at all. If anything, I was, like, not, you know, affected by her. But when I watched it at home, like, downloaded it, I was, like, freaking out for her. I mean, she was so much.
She brought a real, like craziness to Sally that really I'd never seen before. Yeah. A real unhinged neediness.
That's what you want.
Okay, so we're rolling.
Is Follies on your list of, like, shows you want to direct?
I would love to, but
yeah.
I doubt it'll happen.
Well, you've got a long time.
Right, anytime soon, I mean.
The thing I loved about this one, the National Theater production, is that they really went all out, and they had, like, the big set, the big yeah. cast.
But they can actually produce it, which
they
is
didn't
so
tear
rare.
It down at all, yeah.
But it had to be pared down from what the original was, wasn't it?
Probably, but it's probably on the same scale. I mean, the National is, like, it's an enormous production. Did you see the Matthew Warchus production of it?
Yes, in 2000, the Roundabout.
I really liked that production. Maybe it was the first one I saw.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I was young and stupid.
I liked the, like, spookiness of it.
Yeah.
Who was in that one?
With Blythe Danner, Janet Ivy, Holly Bergen.
Okay.
Treat Williams, and...
what a treat.
Literally.
Gregory Harrison.
Mm-hmm. You probably don't know who he is.
Mm-hmm. He's like a TV movie hunk from the
80s. He was a musical theater star.
Right, he did Paper Moon. Paper Moon with Christina Rosol.
Mm.
And Lindsay Alley.
Was she the little Tatum part?
Yeah.
I love it.
Brooke Sunny Moriver.
Right, was she like
she
young
was like
Heidi?
The opera singer.
Well, and like Kelly O'Hara was like young Sally or young Phyllis. Mm-hmm. I think young Phyllis,
and
maybe.
Wasn't the voice of you know
Marnie Nixon?
Marnie Nixon,
yes,
was
totally.
It, right?
She might have been the
right.
replacement.
Okay,
but she was in that production. Weird people were in that production, like Betty Garrett.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
that's who I mean. Yeah, like from the Vernon Show. Polly Bergen was great. Well, it was like a comeback for her. Started from that. I guess it was a very short-lived comeback, but only because she was short-lived. She was killing it.
It's funny you mentioned Kelly. I'm like really. Ready. I'm excited for her to age into Sally eventually. You know, I'd love to see her play that.
Well, there's those queens that would say she's there now. I mean, I'm always wanting, you know, it to be like Patty and Bernadette, no matter what year it is. Not necessarily in Follies, right? But like in anything, Mame. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
I mean, although the revival with Bernadette and the incredible Jan Maxwell.
Yes.
They were so good.
So good. Especially Jan. But but people are always saying, like, when I want those old bitches to play these parts, like, you know, no. Like, you know, Angela was 41 when she did. They're always coming in with these, like, facts of, like, the character is really supposed to be 35.
Yeah, but 41, you know.
It means something different now.
Who knows what it means?
Well, I mean, I can tell you that. It's in my past, 41.
I mean, what's the thing I keep seeing online? It's like J-Lo is now the same age that Rue McClanahan was when she started the Golden
Girls. Yeah, that's wild.
It's so wild.
It's wonderful. We have a longer trajectory, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, your trajectory at your young age has already been incredibly exciting and varied and everything. We were just talking about directing stuff and me trying to shove you back into, singing songs in Joseph and Pippin. I mean, that when I saw you in Pippin, I didn't see it in LA, but the concert version here, I still think that was the definitive Pippin for all, not the production necessarily, although it was very cool, but your performance.
Thank you. That was fun.
I wish you had a recording of that. I wish that you had an album of you singing those songs properly in a studio with all the accoutrements.
It'll have to live on in the memories of.
I don't know. I bet you could still hack it.
People who.
But I did see you do Joni Mitchell at Joe's Pub. Do the whole album of Blue. Did you literally do the exact album as it was?
In order from top to bottom.
Incredible. And
Todd Allman did the arrangements, which were amazing.
Oh, I don't think I knew that. I was so drunk then, I don't remember who was the... But I remember Christian directed it, right?
Yeah.
And I don't... You didn't talk much, did you?
No. I don't think I talked at all.
Mm. Was it just like... Was it piano? Was it...
It was piano, two guitars,
mm-hmm.
harp.
Mm.
Amazing harpist. That I had worked with Duncan Cheek. She plays all of Duncan Cheek stuff. And I think there was also... There was a percussionist. And I want to say... Maybe there was a cello.
Mm.
Or a bass or something. There's another piece. And then two backup singers. It was a Yeah, I didn't make any money, let's be honest. I spent it all on the music, but it was a...
That's cabaret.
Great night. Yeah, exactly.
So that was already something. I mean, that now is... Was that 15 years ago? Not that many years, but...
Probably that many.
In that range. Mm-hmm. And it was already something that had been in your
life.
That would
have been like 2006 or something. So that's almost 15 years ago.
So, well, you were a youth. When did that album come into your life?
That album, I first heard it in high school. Mm. I went to a place called Interlochen Arts Academy.
Oh, yeah.
It's a boarding school
in
northern Michigan. Where you wear uniforms of blue.
Oh, okay.
Light blue.
Yeah, you have to wear a light blue, or at least you did. I think it's still the same. A light blue collared shirt and a dark blue, either pants or corduroy pants.
Mm-hmm. I love this. Is that in honor of Joni? Or
tucked in.
Not
I don't think you have to tuck it in anymore. No, I think it's just the way it's always been since the 20s. But the 1920s.
Oh, yeah, God, look at that.
Isn't that funny? And they did this one-act festival every year. It's an art school, and a one-act festival of new plays by the writers.
Mm-hmm.
And this writer named Calgary Martin, who I was in playwriting class with, wrote a play called I Hate You Some, I Love You Some.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a three-person play. It was about a relationship, about these two people who meet up in a bar years after they've like had some affair or breakup, and the entire play takes place over the duration of Blue.
Oh, wow.
So we had to time the play to the
album.
Oh
my God.
So I like had never heard the album. I didn't really know Joni Mitchell, and she was like, I wrote this as like an homage to this album.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, like, me and the girl, good story coming on that later, and then the bartender, who is now, he died, that actor, this kid I went to school with, God. And he, like, played their actual record of Blue and then, like, turned it over. And when it stopped, like, we had to stop. He turned it over and then we could continue on.
Wow.
And the girl was Alexandra Silber.
Oh, wow.
Broadway's Alexandra Silber.
Yes. Ow.
And that was really like so that album is really brought us closer together and doing that play, I Hate You Some, I Love You Some. It was sort of loosely based on the song The Last Time I Saw Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the events of that song kind
that
of occurred.
Sounds like the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, during the play.
So it's like Detroit in, what is it, Detroit
68.
In 68.
Yeah.
All romantics meet the same fate someday, cynical and drunk and boring someone in some dark cafe.
You laugh, he said, you think you're immune. Go look at your eyes, they're full of moon. You like roses and kisses and pretty men to tell you all those pretty lies, pretty lies. When you're gonna realize they're
that was the play. In a sentence.
I picture you and Al Silver even at like
just in high school, cynical and drunk.
But I see you, of all people at that age, getting that song, you know?
Well, I mean, not really. I mean, like I remember I like became obsessed with that album because of that. And it became like my road trip album anytime I was in the, sort of like, I really connect that album to being in a car.
Mm-hmm.
Same, yeah.
Right?
Totally. I first heard A Case of You when I was driving to high school in my senior year, and I was like, what is this song I'm hearing? And it, like, really, yeah, I'm that same way.
Yeah, I think we, like, our characters kissed during A Case of You, of course.
Oh, of course.
Oh, Canada. not the Interlochen's in Canada. So, what was the other music you were listening to when...
Oh, I was obviously listening to Audra McDonald's first album.
Okay, this is taking us back to 1999.
It's taking us way back to Paradise.
Yes, thank you.
The name of the album. My high school roommate, his name is, and was, and is Dane Laffrey, and he has designed all of the Broadway shows I've done.
Oh, incredible.
It's Spring Awakening, Once in this Island, we've worked together on everything. He's a fabulous Tony-nominated designer, And he and I used to listen to, I had this like 3 CD changer, which was like, I was really cool. And it could, every morning, Way Back to Paradise, Audra McDonald woke us up.
Great
wake up. And it was, the first song was,
My Arms Wide.
Ricky and Gordon's setting of, oh my God, why can't
something about a black girl, right?
The Poet. Yes. I think maybe Langston Hughes, right? We should do our research here.
To me, it was just a show tune.
But it was I remember waking up every day senior year to that.
Yeah.
That arpeggio.
To fling my arms wide in some place of the sun, to whirl and to dance till the white day is done, then rest at cool evening beneath the tall tree, while night comes on gently. That is my dream.
Yeah.
Ricky and Gordon. So I was listening to that.
Great album.
Also, like, the Floyd Collins album had just come out, so I was really into
that. Did you ever do Floyd Collins?
No. We did a concert of it in high school, weirdly.
Wow. I'll take it.
Sure.
I've taken a concert of MAME, but it wasn't offered.
So I was really into that. What else was I listening to at the time? Honestly, those, like, Blue... That I was really into classical music at that time, still am, but like I was listening to a lot of like Samuel Barber my senior year. Piazzolla, Astor Piazzolla, who's an Argentinian composer, really incredible. So I was like, because I was going to like Interlaken, so it was like all classical music students.
Yeah.
So, and like this was pre-internet, so we couldn't stream music.
Mm.
Like you had to buy the CD.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. And then, of course, I, like, loved my No Doubt CD and, you know, my probably Matchbox 20 CD.
Oh, so you still had, like, a foot in, like, the, like, pop culture
world.
A little bit.
But I was sort of, like, jumped off into the, like, art music
world. What did you want to do at that time, like, when you would think about what was your fantasy for your life?
Well, I was, I really wanted to be a lighting designer.
Mm.
But I was, like, going to school for acting and playwriting, and I thought maybe I would be a playwright, but I thought I wasn't very good at that. Calgary Martin was much better, as made proof by her one act, I Hate You Some, I Love You Some. I wanted to be a lighting designer, but we were, you know, kind of doing it all. So I was making props for shows with Dane and Al and Ben Walker, and like it was this whole crew of people who are, you know, now Nick Westrate, wonderful actor who's here in New York.
He's the For the Girls podcast.
Oh, yes, that's right. Amazing. So I was lucky enough to like be in living in the woods with all these people, but knowing that like I wanted to be in the arts, but what that meant, I didn't really know.
Mm-hmm. So when you would listen to, I guess if with something as broad as a perspective as you were having on your own work in the future, when you got into something like Joni Mitchell, it didn't have to be a blueprint of what you wanted to do for yourself. If you said, you know, you were reading, you know, Hal Prince's book or like listening to like Michael Crawford's album, it might seem more like Michael Arden, you know.
Yeah, it definitely pathways. Wasn't that. I was like, I was obsessed with, like, Heather Headley as Aida, definitely. But I also was, like, really into Shakespeare in a major way, and Chekhov, and Ralph Ellison. And, you know, luckily, the school I went to wasn't just, like, a performing arts school. It was, like, a visual arts school and classical music school. And so it felt really well-rounded in terms of my, like, education and the teachers who were teaching the like humanities classes, like the English and stuff, like the books we were reading were really influential to me, like Invisible Man and I'm trying to remember, that was my favorite book of that year.
And so what age did you start going to Interlaken?
I started going when I was 16.
16. So you'd gone to, like, junior high back home in Texas, is that right?
Yeah.
Where in Texas are you from?
Midland, Texas.
Oh, I've been there.
It's a town way west. It's where baby Jessica fell down the well.
Oh.
And the Bushes are from Midland.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a really small, surprisingly liberal Episcopal school.
Hmm.
And then halfway through my junior year, I had gone to a summer at Interlaken, auditioned for the academy, because they do both the summer camp and the academy, and ended up transferring halfway through my junior year. So I actually wasn't in Michigan for that long, but it was a very potent time. Because, you know, it's like the first time I got to be around other people who all wanted to, like, do what I had a passion for the arts, as opposed to, like, oh, you're the artsy kid in the school. It was like, everyone is the artsy kid. So it just, like, felt like this bubbling, you know, we would, like, stay up at around bonfires and, like, read Chekhov. Like, that's what we did for fun. Like, we weren't, like, smoking in the woods. We were, like, doing the Crucible, you know?
That's so Al Silver.
So,
that's so cool that you kind of had both experiences, though.
Yeah.
I mean, halfway through junior year, it kind of feels like the time when a person would be, you've had the high school experience, the rest is a little bit just, like, the coasting,
totally.
You know?
Yeah, I'd, like, gone to the football games and stuff and done that.
Texas.
Right.
But you had also done, like, was it, you were a child actor doing...
I had done, like, community theater.
Community theater.
Yeah, a lot, like, since middle school, since probably sixth grade. Fifth or sixth grade was my first, like, show I did.
Mm. And did you have that, like, hunger to, like, work at the time?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to, like, move away and be a child, but be in Les Mis. Like, I really wanted to,
so
I
Broadway,
really wanted
not
to be
LA.
Gavroche.
Yeah.
No, it was always theater. Like, I was always much more interested in theater than I was in film.
And were you into other, like, singer-songwriters before Joni? I mean...
Oh, yeah. Like, went to Lilith Fair. So, like, loved all those ladies. Oh, you know what? I was really into Indigo Girls.
Oh, sure.
Still am, obviously, but I was, like...
They have a new album,
obsessed.
Like,
they do.
Coming right
it.
Out, right?
It's
is it great?
And, like, you know, Natalie Merchant, Sarah McLachlan,
Of
course, Goddess.
Of course.
So I, like, Sean Colvin. Mm-hmm. I went to these concerts. I would, like, had a godmother in Dallas who I would, like, go to and get to go to these concerts. We'd, like, schedule it where I could, like, go see the national tour of West Side Story and go see, like, Lilith Fair or Sean Colvin or...
Oh, I love
something
that.
Something like that. So I saw all these, like... I got to see a lot of, like, really cool concerts.
And that... So they were... Because they all would have probably acknowledged some debt to Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm certain. I mean, Lilith Fair is like, a...
shrine.
Yeah.
it's a legacy. So...
Just me as some, like, gay middle school, like, boy at Lilith Fair.
I can only
imagine what... I mean, like, it didn't seem weird to me at the time, but...
Oh, wow. That was so me as well.
Erykah Badu.
Yeah.
You know, I got to, like, see her, like, fifth row center when I was, like, you know, in middle school, being like, what is this?
Oh, it's Erykah Badu time.
Every time you say her name, a bell rings.
One bell rings. What did that give you? What was special? What was different about Joni Blue that hit you at that point, having all that kind
of context?
I think
because, like, the production of that album is so spare.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she really just, like, kind of recorded it with, like, two people.
Yeah.
You know? And something about... It seemed very in one setting. It's, like... I was very moved by the fact that it was kind of a travelogue, kind of like a long-form monologue. It wasn't, like, a bunch of different bops all together.
Right.
It was, like, she sat down and had these stories to tell in this order.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they all kind of related to each other, both sonically and lyrically.
Mm-hmm. It's an arc.
Yeah. So I thought that was really... I was like, oh, it's just, like, her and a guitar and, you know, James Taylor on the other guitar. You know, I mean... but I thought that was really... It made me think about, like, how little one needs to tell a story.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Do you, like, I mean, I could see that in some of your directing work for sure. You know, that kind of simplicity and elegance.
I'm shocked to hear you say that, because I always feel like I'm, like, maximalism to the max. But
I feel like, I mean, certainly once on this island, like, there's, I mean, there might have been a lot of, like, money or, you know, labor that goes into it, but what it has a simplicity, you know. I mean, that just being in the what is that? Not the round, like three-quarter promenade.
It was the round, yeah, that was the round.
Yeah, so all the more. I mean, you know, you weren't giving us, like, huge backdrops and moving pieces. I mean,
no, I mean, I guess that's true. I mean, I've always been I'm like super interested in like the real thing. Like,
yeah,
which I guess is why, you know, like Joni's album is like just that piano and two guitars,
very honest and spare,
and like, you know, someone playing some bongos. So it's like, in Once in This Island, like I wanted it to be just the like real things, like just the sand,
the
and
dirt,
the,
yeah,
and like
that,
all the candles
water
are like actual candles that we have to like take the time to light, and if they don't light, you have to like stand there and light them.
That sounds stressful.
Yeah,
but I'm thinking Spring Awakening would qualify in that category too.
Yeah, I mean, those pieces are sort of in conversation in terms of like it wasn't about like stage magic,
right,
or effects, mm-hmm, or automation. There was none. There was none.
Does that stuff as an audience member, stage magic and effects and automation, ever excite you? Or
oh yeah,
you
totally. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, there are projects I'm working on now that are definitely like automation,
yeah,
mm-hmm, for the gods, but which is exciting too. But it's just you know, I think it can't ever be like the point.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. But that's, you know, mentioning Hal Prince again, like Phantom of the Opera is like super technical, but it's so beautiful, and
yeah,
it never like overshadows the story.
Right? Yeah,
right.
I just saw Phantom like last year again for the first time.
Me too.
Oh,
and
so
I
good
feel like a lot of people are going back to it now.
It's
yeah
so good.
I guess that makes sense.
It's like he knows how to. I can't even imagine seeing that when it came out. Like,
yeah,
it must have been so, like those manager scenes when they're all like doing that sort of viewpoints movement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, 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 yeah.
It's like it's high art. It's amazing.
It's
viewpoints
very
movement.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
It's very,
you know what I'm talking
that
about?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally.
They're all listening to the Phantom's voice,
uh-huh,
and kind of like moving and then stop. And, you know, I can't imagine, like.
I wonder if,
totally.
What's her name that choreographed it? Oh, God. Was that Gillian Lynn? No, she didn't choreograph Phantom.
I have no idea.
Because I don't think of him as doing, like, I would think that would be, like, musical staging for Hal. And, like, oh, we're looking it up. This is
I'm
brilliant.
I'm
going
to look it up. I never got to work with him, which is.
Mm.
Phantom choreographer. How do I not know this?
I really need to rewatch it.
I think it's yeah, it's Dame Gillian Barber Lynn.
Look at that. R.I.P.
R.I.P.
You know, and they talk about like what with like Pat Birch on Parade. Wait, did you Parade at some point, didn't you? Am I making that up?
I directed a reading of Parade.
I don't think I knew that. I think I just like spun the globe.
Just like imagine that. I have worked with Pat Birch though. I love her.
Oh yeah. When did she direct you and stuff?
She directed me a couple readings like when I was right out of school.
Mm.
Really love her.
Because you were kind of like the it boy when you were like fresh in musical theater, right?
You know, what happened?
Well, now you become a huge force. I mean, you know, that's the story.
No, I was really lucky to like right out of school work with like my first job out of school was like Bear Pop Opera, which was great. But my first like industry job during that was like the first reading of Lestat, like with Elton John.
Oh,
and like Jan Maxwell was in that.
Was she Carolee's part?
Yeah.
Oh, how weird.
Huh? It was wild. So like they did all these like, it's like meeting all these amazing people at a very young age.
Well, you'd gone to Juilliard after Interlaken, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you went there for acting?
I did.
How was that?
It was great.
Yeah.
It was, I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I only did 2 years there. And then
I
sneakily auditioned for Big River at the Roundabout, mm-hmm, which is my first time working with Def West. And it was going to be fine because I could have done the show. It was a summer show at the American Airlines, and it was going to close before I had to be back in school.
Mm.
And then like we extended, and I had to like decide whether to like quit the show or go back to school. And I,
first world problem.
I quit school.
You have to, you know, it's real life.
Did you? What I mean, talking of like directing and like simplicity and stage magic and all that, was that must have been incredibly eye-opening to see that what was it, Jeff Calhoun, did he direct mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
Mm. Did he co-direct it with somebody?
No.
No,
no, he directed and choreographed that show.
Had he been working with Def West at that point on other stuff?
He had done one show with Def West prior, I believe, and then he had done Big River in L.A., both mm-hmm. at their small space, and then it was at the Mark Taper Forum. And so the Broadway run was the third time they did that production.
But you were not in L.A.
I wasn't.
You just came
actually,
in.
It was Tom Sawyer was deaf in L.A.
Oh, incredible.
And it was like the one role they changed because they felt they wanted Huck to be more isolated.
Mm.
So, which I, you know, thank God they did because then I got my first job. But it was an amazing first job to get because not only was it like my first job in New York was the Broadway show, which is amazing, but it I had to like learn a new language. Be introduced to a new culture. I was in a dressing room with two deaf people, and that was it. So I, like, it was amazing. So I think it, like, instilled in me this idea that, like, if it's worth doing, it's going to be, like, very difficult.
Yeah.
Or just, like, it requires, like, complete immersion in something. Mm.
Well, and also just the possibility of Broadway as a place where things could go outside the box
and
be so artistic and original. I mean, you could have been, you know, a replacement in Hairspray or something and had, like, a very different, you know, experience.
I don't think I could have been a replacement in Hairspray. I can't dance. So,
well, I don't know. What's his name? Well, I guess you were too young to play Courtney Collins or whatever, but... But I don't, like, I mean, we were talking to Lena Hall, and, like, she was, like, fresh out of, like, high school. She went to, like, the national tour of, like, Annie Get Your Gun with, like, Crystal Bernard.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, very, like, Cats. Showbiz, like,
right.
hard knocks.
No, it was
kind
definitely,
of
like, it felt very, I feel very lucky that that was, like, my introduction to Broadway.
Because
it didn't feel like, you know, we were just recreating something. It felt like we were really doing something worthwhile.
So, like, having that kind of stuff behind you, when you went to take Blue and do it at Joe's Pub, what were, did you, was that a different approach to the material, or was it just about sort of celebrating it? And
I wanted to celebrate it, but also just wanted to, like, you know, I was the, I think, about the same age at the time that I did that she was when she wrote it, so that was
mm-hmm.
part of the reason I wanted to do it right then.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sort of, like, exploration of, like, her words... across time but in the same age and I wanted to be able to like do what she did but also not try to obviously copy it because I can't because I don't have that voice so
mm-hmm.
it was like we got to do new arrangements of it and
yeah.
got to like the last time I saw Richard was a completely new like music to that piece which some people like hated but some I happen to love it.
Is that song was hard to sing?
It is hard to sing. It's a lot. Of, it's like
it was like a whole new song.
It's like recitative almost. It's like you know, joined 68, and he told me all our men is music. It's like so much dialogue. You know, it's,
yeah.
What was that your favorite track on the album, or is there another one you like better?
I love Case of You. I mean,
yeah,
it's probably my favorite
mm-hmm.
track on the album. But
yeah.
like, I also love Carrie and California.
Mm. Yeah, like the
and I was surprised
ones.
By This Flight Tonight.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
like a song I like never really like, loved on the album, but actually became like one of my favorite ones to sing.
It wasn't the one that you gave to me that night down south between the trailers. Not the early one that you can wish upon. Not the northern one that guided in the sailors. Oh, star bright, you've got the loving that I like. All right, turn this crazy bird around. I shouldn't have gone.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we also did it with, like, a dobro, and it was, like, this slide steel
yeah.
guitar kind of thing.
Oh, no, I
want to
go
it.
Back. You don't have a recording, do you?
I do somewhere. I don't know. Some CD in a basement.
You should bring it back. You don't even have to do it. You can just direct it.
So my husband does Ladies of the Canyon, and it's
oh.
Very
I love Ladies of the
surprise
Canyon.
Guest appearance.
So he, it's so beautiful, his
I want to see that. When is that happening again?
He's done it, like, 5 times, so hopefully he'll do it again. But our goal is, like, one day we'll do Blue and Ladies of the Canyon, like...
Oh, Carnegie Hall,
back
yes.
to back at Carnegie Hall. Great.
I love it. It's
you're
a two-act
Carnegie, if you're listening,
die.
let's
or, well, see, I think now you're at home at David Geffen Hall. can get a bigger, can fit a bigger band up there too.
I love, what are other Joni albums do you love? I mean, I'm sure you love, like, Court and Spark.
I love Court and Spark.
Kissing of Summer Lawns. I mean, there's just such a wonderful run of
that little... Yeah, Hyera.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, Liz the Canyon is amazing. Mm-hmm. Miles of Isles is really good.
Oh, yeah, that's, like, the live one.
It's the live one, but it's just so good. But, I mean, specific songs is more, like, what I...
What is
like,
another...
Like, Down to You is, like, one of my favorite. Yeah. So, John Bacchino, amazing
composer. Yes, he wrote those, that Barbara Cook song I love, Sweet Dreams.
Oh, yeah.
The gay guy and the... But those Patti songs, Playbill and... A bunch of those ones.
Okay. Okay.
So, he was, like, a big mentor of mine and good dear friend, and we've done a bunch of stuff together. He is, like, obsessed with...
And he wrote Catered Affair.
He wrote Catered Affair. He wrote a show called It's Only Life that I did with him.
What was that?
It was like a, it was a song cycle of his stuff.
Oh,
that
wow.
Did with like Jessica Malasky and Andrea Burns and Billy,
I wanna see that.
Billy Porter. We did it years ago. There's an album. I didn't do the album. Gavin Creel did the album. I was not in New York, and he sounds amazing. I'm secretly on it and in a couple places when they had to put my voice in.
We
but
just need that Michael Arden moment.
They would, no, it was just like, I think they like had a couple of like harmonies that didn't get in. But Gavin sounds crazy good, of course. But John Bacchino introduced me to a lot of Joni stuff that I didn't know, including, I remember being in his apartment, he played Down to You for me for the first time, and I was, like, blown away.
Everything comes and goes. Pleasure moves on too early and trouble leaves too slow. Just when you think comes knocking at your garden gate, knocking for you, constant stranger. You're a brute, you're an angel. You can crawl, you can fly too. It's down to you. It all comes down to you.
That is like a...
Is she...
That is like a dream, that track.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is she on his album that he had? Oh, no, Judy Collins.
Judy Collins,
is on his album, but not
who
Joni.
Made, who put Joni on the sort of songwriting map.
Right,
a
with
bit.
Both sides now. Mm-hmm. Is that, I like, I'm so tacky, I like the Judy Collins one. It's like in the...
So did a lot of people.
Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, I like the birds. the pop version. What other albums do you love or did you get into that had that, I forget how you described it, but that it felt like it was in one sitting, I think you said.
Oh yeah, where you like want to listen to the whole thing.
That feels like a very relevant kind of musical theater notion.
Yeah, where it sort of like needs to be heard at once.
Yeah.
Robin's album Honey, like I want to listen to it from beginning to end because it's such like what she was out to create with that was like a dance record, so that it wasn't really about like singular tracks but it was about like an overall feeling. It's such an amazing album.
I need to go back and re-listen to that one.
You have to. It's it's so good.
Do you think Robin could write a musical?
I don't know.
Are there any artists like that or even Joni that you would be inspired to collaborate with them either on stuff they already have or writing something theatrical?
The Decemberists.
Oh yeah, I love them.
Who else? Gosh, so many people probably. Ben Folds, 100%.
I love Ben Folds.
Yeah, I'm
what's your favorite
Ben
Folds track?
Oh, that's very difficult. I mean, I think
or album.
The Luckiest is really amazing.
I just sang that at my friend's wedding.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
It's a good song.
I just like
song.
Cry when I hear that
it's
song.
Really, it's a really good song.
Oh, God, it's so good. I love that one, and I love
I like Still Fighting It. Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God.
Jinx. That's a really great song.
Yeah.
Morning sun. 20 years from now. How a bit
was like one of my top played tracks last year on Spotty.
Maggie Rogers, I think, should write a musical. I'm obsessed with her.
She's great.
That album is so perfect that she... I'm ready for more of her music. Do you know Maggie Rogers?
She's wonderful.
She's amazing.
Make my homework from this.
She was my number one Spotify.
Oh, yeah.
Her and Ella Fitzgerald, if that tells you something
about
it.
Mine was Bette Midler and Marilyn May. So just
that tells me a lot about you.
Yeah, it's like the Ellen time cover. Yeah, I'm gay.
Other albums, though, that I felt like, you know, Honey, there's an album by my favorite band called The Rescues called Let Loose the Horses.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
They're unbelievable. It's two men, two women, and they play all the instruments and sing in the most unbelievable harmony, and the songs are just... beautiful.
Are they American?
They are American. They live in LA.
The Rescues.
The Rescues. That. They're amazing. Gotta hear them.
Up, 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 doom and gloom clouds gathering. Up, up, over my head. Up, 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 doom and gloom clouds gathering. Flash flood under my bed. Love. No such thing as love. Clouds gathering fade up away over my head. Love. Up. No such thing as love. Clouds gathering fade.
Gotta hear them. Well, I can't, this is going so fast, but we have to play our game.
We have to play our game, yeah.
We play this game that you'll probably hate, I'm warning you, but, no, we play this with all our guests. It's like Marry, Fuck, Kill, you know that game, of course.
Uh-huh.
And it's called Dolly Concert Kill, so we'll give you three performers, and, it feels so sadistic to make you do it, but three performers, you have to choose one to see as Dolly Levi.
Okay.
One to see in concert, and one to kill.
To murder myself. Okay.
You can have it done.
Okay.
This is so hard. I mean...
So, okay, we have to start with Joni.
Let's go the pop route. It's like Joni...
And then,
I mean...
Robin? Yeah, why not?
I mean, there's so many weird possibilities with that.
Do we cover any other
women? I mean, Audra?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Audra, God.
Yeah, Joni, Audra, and Robin.
It's a good diverse...
Yeah. Oh, my God.
For you to choose from.
Oh, man.
Not to bias you, but you know I do consider you to be the male Audra McDonald.
Well, thank you.
Oh, lovely.
You have said that to me before, and I will have it put on my...
I thought it the second I heard you and laid eyes on you.
Okay. I think I'd have to see Joni in concert because I've seen both Robin and Audra in concert before, and I've never seen Joni. I would obviously love to like go back in time and see Joni.
Which era would you want to see her in?
I mean, like Soprano, like Laurel Canyon days.
Yeah.
I would love like her and James Taylor to do a little concert. Mm-hmm. As Dolly Levi. I mean, like, obviously, we want to see Audra as Dolly, but...
I think that even was, like, a possibility at one point.
Yeah, probably.
Speaking of Sopranos, though.
But, I would say... It would also be interesting to see Robin as Dolly, because I feel like that would just be...
So epic.
So wild and epic, and, like, she's, like, experienced loss in a way that is really profound as... made evidence by the album Honey. Please listen to it.
I feel like that was like a low-key push for Bernadette Dolly, just to have experience loss.
I saw Bernadette.
Was she your favorite Dolly?
She was the only Dolly I saw.
Oh, okay. So favorite and...
Oh, God,
favorite.
Do I really have to choose this? I mean, I guess because, like, I know and love Audra, so she's going to be Dolly, so I'm going to have to kill Robin.
Oh, I think that's understandable.
I mean, like, I mean, it's really hard to, like, I can't kill Audra McDonald.
I don't think anyone can.
No. No one could. So.
Patty tried a couple of times.
So that's my answer. I guess R.I.P. Robin.
R.I.P. Robin.
But.
Well, I'm glad they have an Audra Dolly, though. I'm into that, too.
No.
And Joni Soprano years, that makes sense. How do you feel about the, like, when she comes back and
it's
sings
amazing
the old stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, well, I mean, what a song to sing from two different vantage points.
Yeah, full circle back to Michael Arden topic. I was thinking about that watching, it wasn't in King Lear, which I didn't see, but cause I'm not into Shakespeare, sorry, but to everybody else in the world. But Three Tall Women, I kept thinking that Glenda reminded me of Joni singing Both Sides Now.
Oh, I could see that.
Oh, just, like, the energy.
Maybe we need a Joni biopic in which, like, Glenda Jackson plays Joni Mitchell.
I think you have your next movie, Michael.
I
mean, Joni's really reaching that age now. I mean, obviously she doesn't really perform anymore, but just, like, her fashion choices and, like,
she's
just
diva.
So spot on for me. It's, like, really my vision board going forward in this life.
Well, my vision board going forward in this life includes lots of Michael Arden everywhere.
No,
stage and screen, behind the action and in front of it. And you're wonderful. Thank you for
Thank you, Michael.
This.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're great. Thanks for listening to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. For more episodes, visit Broadway World, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts do be.
Come back next week for our chat with Tony-nominated playwright and actor Charles Bush, coming in to talk about Yentl,
the original motion picture soundtrack.
This episode was edited by me, Daniel Nolan.
Thanks to Emmy-winning composer and lyricist Lance Horn for the Broken Records theme song.
Follow us both, Ben Rimmelauer and Daniel Nolan, on all y'all's socials.
That's Ben Rimmelauer, BenRimmelauer.
And that's Nolan with an E, not Nolan with an A.
Because Nolan with an A isn't it.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.